It's a pleasure being here, and it's been very kind to organize this trip between different locations in Canada. And please feel free to ask questions. So this is an interesting subject, which I think is it's very little known, actually, about it, even though people have heard things. So I'll try to be as plain as possible. But if you have questions, please come up. Speak up. All right, so we're trying to be ambitious, and you know that if you have to put on a scale the universe, you will come up right now with a pile of this, 4% atoms, 22% dark matter, 74% roughly dark energy. Now, how do we know that dark energy and dark matter are there, since they are dark, so they don't emit light so much as we wish they could? Well, but because gravity couples to it, in the same way that I turn off the light here, you still feel the chair, even though you don't see it, because we are stuck to it. So the same is with gravity. Now, one thing that is typically not so much emphasized is that to just describe this 4%, we need at least three forces: electromagnetic, the strong, and the weak. However, typically, to explain the dark matter, we come up with one particle. This is 22% of the universe. As for dark energy, we actually don't really know, so it's even less understood. So put yourself in 96% of the universe and try to model us. What do you think they will come up with? It's just 4%, it's just one particle, right? At best, if they will care. So it's likely to imagine that the rest of the universe will also feature some new forces.
But we know that the 1% is richer than the 99%.
Right, right. I mean, just, you know, this is my point of view. Now, what is the standard model? Well, sorry. The standard model is also, in a way, can be seen as incredibly easy because all the particles of the standard model fit on a postage stamp, except for the Higgs boson we haven't seen yet. So there's an asterisk here that might have been seen, but we don't know that completely. If you ask Weinberg and say, why does the standard model work so well, his answer is that because the standard model is renormalizable, and at the best we get logarithmic corrections in the physics in the cutoff scale of the theory, except for one operator in the standard model, which is the quadratic mass of the Higgs. This operator is super renormalizable, so it's sensitive to the cutoff quadratically. If you englobe also gravity, which is not part of the standard model, then there's another super renormalizable operator, which is the cosmological constant. It's not by chance that these two correspond to the two naturality problem of the standard model plus gravity. They're both sensitive to the ultraviolet.
W plus and W minus separately.
Yeah, because after the trueweak is broken, in fact, they actually, at low energy, you the only symmetry which is left intact is U1 electromagnetism.
We don't have the E plus and E minus separately, and U plus and E minus,
and L plus and L minus. Okay, so again, it's not that I want to defend this picture so much. It's supposed to be just a cartoon. So this is just the three gauge bosons of the standard model. And there's a photon, and then there's the eight gluons. I mean, yeah. I don't want to, as I say, this is just a cartoon that tells us the basic particles. All right. So there's another way that I like to describe the standard model is in basically resemblance of the Moose diagrams. So if you have QCD, it's an SU3 gauge theory. These gluons are basically, these wavy lines means the gluons, they basically feel QCD interactions. And then these lines here, for example, this line here is a quark left, which has a index in color, an index in SU2 left of the weak interactions. These are the weak interactions. This guy here, for example, is an electron left. In the standard model, there's another SU2 right that you can also classify quark right like that. Clearly, something missing here, right? There's a field missing, and this field is the Higgs. The Higgs couples only these two sectors, the Higgs of the standard model. When the Higgs acquires a valve, what you can imagine from seeing from this diagram point of view is that it shortcuts SU2 left cross SU2 right, leaving in mind a U1 electromagnetism. The reason why this is structure is nice from my point of view is that any extension on standard model can always be rewritten geometrically like that. For example, if you had strings, this is.
There are matter in a standard model that is charged under all three groups. You don't have any issue.
No, this is in the case you just set the hypercharge to zero, then you have an issue to left cross issue to right.
That's a good.
When you forget for a moment the hypercharge, there is the standard model that is custodial symmetry. Right? These are the global symmetry of the standard model. When you do any extension of the standard model, you typically think about that, because that's what is useful to have the custodial symmetry of the standard model that relates the mass of the W to Z. You know, if a brainish picture just replaces this, for example, SU3 with a stack of three brains. This, for example, you have D3D7 brains, engineering of the standard model. It doesn't explain the standard model, it just writes engineerizes it in a geometric nice way. And now you see that the gluons are modes that go from brain to brain within this stack. And then you have matter fields. Again, this is just to say that there are many ways of showing the same thing. But I cannot go on before summarizing what the status of the standard model now. Right? So, rephrasing Shakespeare, or more probably better, Coen's Brothers movie, OX were hard out. So, if I were to give this talk before December 2011, that would be basically the status of the Higgs. You see that this is a combined Atlas and CMS analysis at 7 TeV and 2.3 inverse of M2 values. Now, yellow line and green line represent the standard model without the Higgs. Okay, so what would actually be the standard model without the Higgs? And if the black line goes beneath the red line, then that particular standard model with that particular mass will not be phenomenologically viable. For example, a mass of the Higgs with 200 GeV is compatible with the standard model without the Higgs, but it's way below this line and therefore can be seen. Now, there is a window, or there was a window here, where you can see that the data were above the red line. That doesn't mean there is a standard model Higgs, because you can see the line goes still through the green and yellow line, which corresponds to the standard model without the Higgs. So in order to see the Higgs, you should see a bump on this background. Right? This is, on the other hand, what happened on September 13th. This was only Atlas. You can see that. The reason why you see this bump here going above the one line is because it's not combined with the CMS. If that combined, we're already below that one line. But you see here something that seems to stick out from the JASA background. Right. So let me zoom in that. In that region, they observed something like that. This does not mean this plot does not mean that there is a Higgs there. It just says that they see something which is not necessarily compatible with the standard model without a background. What we can say with certainty that there is an exclusion, this is only taken from Atlas, a 95% confidence level for the mass of the Higgs to be between 113 and 115 GeV, and then again this other region. Again, because I'm not combining with the CMS, so there is still a little window between 237 and 251 from Atlas. Let's see a little bit better what kind of signals they might have seen. So now, how do I do that? I have to actually look at the discovery strategy. So as I said, we are phenomenologists, I think, or particle physicists. We're particle physicists, so we should try to see how the experiments look for these things. They look at a number of events, which is the cross-section times the luminosity times the integrated time they've been collecting data. The cross-section, what we're testing, depends on the physics we're looking for. The luminosity, which is the number of particles present in the beam, depend on the characteristics of your machine. As another ingredient, you need to know your background, otherwise you cannot tell me you have discovered anything. So for example, if I'm interested in a process like that, proton-proton to gamma-gamma, I have to remember that in the standard model, the proton-proton to gamma-gamma is dominated by the W loop. There is a kinematic factor 7 in the amplitude. Very good. So go back to the 13th of December. What did they present? Well, they saw an excess into Higgs. So that particular combined plot, which is totally useless for phenomenology, because it just shows the deviation, the overall deviation from the standard model or from the background. What is useful is this. You want to know how much in different channels it's gone. This you can use for phenomenology. Now, Higgs goes to gamma-gamma. They saw a 2.8 sigma standard deviation excess around 126. So this is the other experiment. And Higgs to ZZ star, potential Higgs signal to ZZ star at 2.1 standard deviation. And these were only three events. Now, you know that the Higgs with 125 cannot decay kinematically into ZZ. That's why there is a star on the, one of the two Zs, right? It must be virtual. And the same for the two Ws, they're actually virtual too. And these are the four leptons. If I go to the Higgs to gamma gamma, what they actually have seen is this little bump here. Now, interestingly, they didn't try to fit it with the standard model Higgs. On the other hand, they present the standard model Higgs to gamma gamma broad signal at 130. You see, these things are quite, it's quite broad. I mean, so this is very prominent. All right, I don't want to go more into the details. Reassuringly, I mean, it's reassuring that even CMS saw some kind of, not completely incompatible with ATLAS, say. Of course, we have seen in the literature, and we've seen in the experiment before, three sigma excesses going away, right? So a discovery can only be claimed of five sigma. But this is a broad brush summary of what we know since the 13th of December 2011. And I think any phenomenologist that discussed about beyond standard model physics must know the status now. Now, that is not the only thing that we can say about beyond standard model physics. Let's go recap the MSSM status. Well, for specific model of supersymmetry, so I'm sure that your model of supersymmetry is not ruled out, but there are other models which are being studied. And this is, for example, SUGRA and CMSSM. These are the definition used. You can see that the bands on especially colored objects are growing pretty fast. Colored objects are easier to be seen than non-colored ones. So if you want to make a model that's revised, try not to make it colored so much. I think it's brilliant what the experimenters have done in terms of defining a chart where they have all the different particles and the bound in terms of their mass in TeV, so where one is the TeV ring. You can see that, for example, the quarks and the gluino in certain supersymmetric extensions are reaching the TeV scale. If anything goes much below the above the TeV scale, the particular model starts becoming a little bit less interesting from the point of view of the explaining the electroweak or being at the electroweak. At least that will be the psychological effect for everybody. But what does LHC not see? Well, there are many models that people actually have come up with, right? Now you can see this is the TeV scale. For example, the large extra dimensions, we've gone up to 3.2 TeV. So there was no reason to have larger extra dimension of the electroweak. Yeah? So there's no fundamental reason that. Sorry?
There's a great reason.
Yeah, right. No. I mean, I think I'm just, I'm a particle physicist. I'm looking from the electroweak breaking point of view. Right? So I don't want to enter in any other thing.
He's
right?
Ambitious.
Funny. Absolutely. Again, I don't want to hurt anybody's feelings, okay? So don't. A posteriori is always easier to make some comments. For example, the W prime at Z prime, the traditional W prime at Z prime, also been highly constrained by the data. This is just an upshot. I mean, of course, there are many, many more models, but it's good to have an idea of how far they're going in ruling it out. So this was not even with 5 inverse of femto bands, but only 1.6 inverse of femto bands. So these constraints are even tougher now. All right. So what about, for example, the theory like Technicolor? How much Technicolor parameter space has been investigated? And by Technicolor, will be even more precise along the course of this talk. Now, this is the self-coupling of the Techni rho, and this is the common mass of the axial and the vector, which is a parameter in the Lagrange that tells you how heavy the spin 1 resonances are. And this is being obtained by basically scaling up these constraints, the red one, the data with a few inverse of Pico bands, right? Now, Y and W are the not only ST and parameters of Peskin and Takeuchi, but they're all the seven parameters. So in fact, there were already constraining coming from these seven possible parameters, higher derivatives of S and T. And they're actually very sensitive when the self-coupling on the technical row to itself is actually light. It's a very easy way to understand that. So if you're interested, I can explain that. So the smaller is G, the more constraints you can put in the masses of these guys. In fact, the naive thing to say that when G tilde becomes of the order of the electron weak, you have the same bounds you have for W prime and Z prime. Okay. Now, if you were to just scale up QCD, which doesn't work for other reasons, but if you were to do that, then G tilde is around 7, 8, and the mass of this axis are here. The mass of, sorry, this, of the spin 1 resonance is around 2.5 tet. It will be very, very hard by just trying to produce these guys to rule it out. All the white means it's phenomenologically possible.
So, just to make sure I understand what I'm looking at.
G tilde is self for all.
Those are the bounds that you would, so given an MA.
Right.
These are the bounds that you'll be able to set.
Exactly. Up. Anything below these would have been, for example, ruled out.
That's
Tevatron. This is a Tevatron. This is a YW. The red is a CMS. Using W prime and Z prime, you can actually rescale those and try to make bounds on that. And again, for 20 years, this wasn't done. Okay? It's direct searches. Okay, you want to see this, right? Now, we did also the projection up to 13 TeV and 100 inverse femtobands. So you can see that still you won't be able to cover the entire parameter range of these theories at the effective Lagrangian level. I didn't tell you anything about what is the underlying theory. I can just tell you that if G tilde is 7 and the mass is around 2.5, you go into QCD scaled up. All right. Sorry.
Something I'm a little bit, well, maybe you can comment on later. But
I'll go back to this and I'll tell you how to.
But, you know, for SUSY, we already have tensions that has to do with fine tuning. Mm. Now, at some level in Technicolor, you will have the same problems if the Technicolor scale is pushed up.
I will, the question is that the natural Technicolor scale, by just taking QCD scaling it up, for these resonances, it's not 1/3, it's 3/3. Right? If you just naively take QCD and do really the scaling up, there is no state which is so lighter than a 10.
Possibly, I'm just saying that, you know, just level of effective field theory, there are bounds coming from that sort of idea.
Right. But all I'm saying is that I can just take QCD and tell you what is the value of G tilde and it's out here. So if actually even with super LHC, you wouldn't be able to test it completely. You will see strongly coupled WW scattering. You will see that. How will you be able to discover the particles? That's another story.
That's a world where the Higgs is not right, right? That's a
say it again.
That's a world where the Higgs is not right. It's a world where the Higgs
no, this particular thing in lepton decays, it doesn't care about whether the Higgs is light or composite. Sorry, whether it's light or heavy.
But in a world where the resonances are all at 3 GeV, you need to explain why.
I will get back to that. This is a really young production of the technical row. QQ bar goes to a row and goes to lepton. This particular process, whether or not you have a light composite X, could be a dilaton, is not.
You have to dismantle, we don't know what your deal is, but more or less the spirit of your answer to Itai was that everybody's heavy.
Yeah. Well, I mean.
But the thing is, but the spirit of Itai's question was that if everybody's heavy, then you have to explain anything that's light. So you will explain something.
Right. So, for example, what you can have, these are heavy. But the composite X is light. And the composite, even if the composite X is light, it does not affect this picture. Because it doesn't enter these diagrams.
But then the question
of we will have other observables. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Sorry, I mean, I just. This is the most, you know, the simplest thing you can do with spin 1 resonances where you don't have any contamination from other possible states. Let me go back to that. All right, so there is a large parameter space to be explored just for these guys. So let me go back about the Technicolor geometry. Right. Now, something that I think is worth recalling is that if I ask the simple question, take the standard model, eliminate the Higgs, does the W have a mass, and how big that is, if it doesn't. Now, even in the absence of the Higgs, Q QCD, I'll give you the answer for free. QCD has already broken the electric wave. It's already broken the electric wave correctly, and I give a mass of the W to the MEV. If you were, and some people do, to construct a precision observable on the mass of the W, you have to take into account of that correction. So, in fact, you've already experimented dynamic electric wave symmetry break. Although that's not the bulk of the mass of the W, it's still there. So there's not, I don't have to justify to you dynamic electric wave symmetry breaking. It's already there. And it happens because of QCD. Now, what, on the other hand, it doesn't provide the bulk of the mass of the W, so I actually imagine another technicolor sector. And you see, I'm doing this technicolor sector, which just replaces the Higgs, and therefore this only combines SU2 left across SU2 right. You can imagine other things. You can imagine that these things also mingles with color. But as I say to you, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to stick to the simplest possible extension of technicolor that only worries about replacing the Higgs with another weak another dynamics, only in the electrophobic sector. Now, when this condensate form, like it happened for QCD, you have exactly the same shortcut you did before. Good. So in practice, if I were to define correctly dynamic electrophobic symmetry breaking, I would say I take the Lagrangian of the Higgs and I replace it with some new Lagrangian, which is made, for example, by fermions and some gauge interactions. And often people forget about these dots here. So this will be relevant to break the electro weak. But as soon as you put fermions in the theory, there might be some anomaly, some gauge anomaly, some Witten anomaly, and you have to cure those. A complete theory, ambitious theory, will have to actually be well-defined. In models like holographic technicolor, where everything is bosonic, you don't know what is the fermionic structure behind. In these things, once I make a fundamental theory with fundamental fermions, I will know whether or not I need other structure there. These dots are partially fixed by anomalies as well as other principles. For example, you might need a new standard model like fermions, leptons, but not quarks. It depends on the theory you start. For these ones, this object will also fetch precision data, not only this part. You have to take the entire model together. Now, the original models of technical D model by Weinberg and Susskind was that, okay, I just copy QCD. Right? It's SU3 one fundamental doublet. And what? How do you do this precision data? I mean, you actually compute this, or you would like to compute this two-point function. For example, this is a W3 hypercharge. This is in fact the S parameter. You have to subtract what you consider to be the standard model. And by you have to construct what is supposed to be the standard model, you have to tell me the mass of the top and the mass of the Higgs. Now the top is very much known. The mass of the Higgs is not known. So that becomes a parameter in the theory. And then you have to compare with your full theory. The correct way of doing would be I rewrite the standard model with technicolor and I fit to the data. That's not what has been done, because the experimentalists have fit to the standard model. So what they do in practice is they fit to the standard model and they start removing the Higgs. Right? And then they say, well, for a specific mass of the Higgs, I will think that this is as if I had a technicolor theory. The two things requires a leap of faith, right? You should actually really, the correct way to do would actually to fit to your new theory. Well, the question is, as you keep the standard model Higgs away and it becomes more and more non-perturbative, your fit to the data are not that great. Right? It becomes non-perturbative to physics. But I'm not trying to argue that that's what has been done, so we take it to the face value. So if you were to take the technical as if it were equivalent to one TeV standard model Higgs, and you will compare with, for example, this, this is the value that you have for the S, T parameter is zero in this theory because there is a custodial symmetry to start with. Then you have that you can scale up the value of S in QCD, which they come from phenomenology or from the lattice, and you find that you're a few standard deviations away from this. And that's one of the problems of technical.
Are you at some point that tells the particles that we're talking about?
Say it again?
Are you at some point that define your model and say
I'm going to do it. I'm constructed by first looking at the problems. And
I know you're doing a bit of a dance of a thousand metals, but could you kind of just so we can see where you're going, could you just write on the board?
I guess what Lippin referring to is the last time you had those dot dots.
This one?
No, on the last line, you had three dots.
It's hard to assess any of these arguments unless we know what the full part of the content is.
So which you're talking about?
The dots he's talking about is what you're talking about, the Fermions.
Yeah, the thing is, which one you want to know?
At some point at lunch, it sounded like you actually had a very specific
problem.
Yeah. I will actually specify the model toward the end, when I have to say how to solve this problem.
So it would help a lot if you just write down like a gauge group and the part of the content, and then whenever you talk about things, you talk about S and T, and it's hard to know. If we don't know what the part of
right.
We don't know who's big and who's positive and negative.
So this is going to be basically up left, down left, up right, down right. Then you have and this is a SNS. So this is going to be my technical. Technicolor written by Weinberg and Saskin, except that I'm using SU2 of Technicolor. I'm not putting in the fundamental representation with the adjoint. This has vastly different gauge dynamics than the model you've seen before.
Is that asymptotically free?
Yeah.
And how does it run? I remember, if you go back to the old days, one of the pictures was that the idea was that the coupling here would be growing faster, so they all unified somewhere. This would be the one that goes.
This one. Alpha of a minimal work, this was called minimal work in Technicolor as a function of the energy, either goes like this or it goes like this. So either it's freely walking or it's conformally infrared from lattice state. So it's vastly different from this.
The snap hole charges are as you wrote, the U has the same hypercharge in SU2.
I will get to the value of this. I mean,
I deflected you were kind of starting to write things, and then before you got a chance to finish, sure. I deflected you, so I should let you.
Yeah, absolutely.
You finish the part.
So this is that, and then I have to have a new electron and a new neutrino. This can have, depending on the hypercharge choice I give that, they can have either the standard model charges or some exotic charges, like doubly charged or singly charged.
But the simplest thing is that they're standard model signals.
Yes.
And then
So this would be standard model doublets, weak doublets, that's fine. Like a fourth family level.
And then the rest of the theory is we've got SU3 questions.
The size is standard model.
Standard model.
Yeah. That's very simple. I allowed myself to use higher dimension representations. That's what people did not allow themselves to do before. Now, can I go?
Right.
That's fine. I wish typically I could do that first because I always typically ask about the problem of Technicolor first. Right? So, good. Now,
we go to your S plot, right? So you had the thing of you go back to the other. So this was a story where we had one fundamental doublet.
Yeah. So the S parameter here in the Weinberg system. Is actually the naive S parameter is clearly one doublet, so that would be happy. Three, because there are three colors, so the dimension of the technicolor is fundamental, so SU3, divided by 6 pi. And then there's a factor 2 here, which is non perturbative dynamics in front of it. So it is twice as big the naive S parameter, which you get by just one loop computation.
Is that what people know about?
Yeah. It's computed on the lattice, and it's basically computed by the, it's called the L10 coefficients of the Cayley Lagrange in QCD. It's been computed, and it's done.
So
Weinberg, they don't have this extra formula. They have a big value here in front of it because it is non-conformal or near-conformal. I can argue that this can become small, I can get up to unity. Now, there are people like other people that report that they claim they can go to zero. I don't believe that. I have some arguments for which the naive one is the absolute lower bound on S. So So I'm actually more conservative.
Are those strong a couple times? Supposing I just did the one loop calculation, would you have said?
You get this 1 times 3 divided by 6 pi.
And in your case, you get 1 and 3, you get 2.
Yeah, and that is a factor of 2 the non-perturbed dynamics. My claim is that you can show, because I can now, if I have a conformal window with a function of number of colors, I can compute. See, some people say because in a conformal window of Carroll symmetry doesn't break, then the S parameter can vanish. That is an incorrect statement. That depends on the limits you're taking on the way you send the mass of your particle to zero respect to the external momentum. And for 20 years, it was a wrong limit being taken. So in fact, if you send the momentum to zero, keep the mass fixed, and then send the mass to zero, the S parameter doesn't vanish even inside the conformal window, where it's calculable, close to the point where you lose the Betz-Axe fixed point. So you can compute it here. And you can even show that the two loops, S increases as you would like to see. So here, the best way to define the S is normalizing S, S divided by S naive. Because effectively, this is the number you're interested in, right? The other is a geometric number. So this particular number here, you can show that in perturbation theory, he's equal to unity here, as he should be, and now you can trust. Then as you decrease the number of flavor increases toward 2, as you actually would expect. And some people is hoping that this actually goes to 0 as you enter the conformal window from this side. And I don't believe that's the case. So I believe that a more conservative approach is to use as a potential lower bound for us the naive one. That is as small as can you possibly have, which is actually pretty big. Some people claim that can go to 0, and that's not going to happen. I don't believe it's going to happen.
So the bottom line is that if all you had was use these and use these, it would be big.
I will use the naive S parameter as an estimate of walking dynamics,
and, it would be big.
And that would be typically big, but 100% smaller than the one in Weinberg had, because that was a factor of 2 in front of them.
But still, if I worked with data, I'd be worried.
Yeah. And then there is that the composite X can be lighter, and therefore this can become the ellipsis goes down. And simultaneously, you have a calculable electron and neutron contribution that is negative.
Right. So the whole package together can be acceptable.
Exactly.
But it relied on the
ENM. Exactly. Within reasonable acceptable values. So as I said, this is going to be the rule of the game. Hope this is okay. I haven't seen better done so far. Then, even if I do that, somebody would complain about the standard model frame of masses, right? This particular contribution for masses so far doesn't solve the generation of the standard model frame. So I'm actually giving you first all the problems, right? Because, I mean, there's no point to hide that. Now, let's go back to the standard model. The standard model does a brilliant job. There's no other extension of the standard model that does as well as the standard model in the UCAVA segment. It doesn't explain where the mass of the particles come from. It doesn't explain the hierarchy of the UCAVAs. But one has to admit that one single Higgs has so much protections and it seems to work really well. In fact, if from my point of view, this is a subjective point of view, if the standard model works, it's not because it breaks the electric weak, it's because it does a fantastic job in the UCAVA set. Okay. Having said that, remember, in supersymmetry, you have to have 2 Higgs and so forth, so on. Everything becomes more complicated. Now, the moment I say that the Higgs is not a fundamental degree of freedom, and I'm willing to identify with the QQ bar state. Remember that in any hadronic state, this is again a first incorrect statement, right? Any hadronic states is a linear combination of different Fock spaces in the theory, the QQ bar, QQ bar square, glue, and so forth. So, right? So this is a naive substitution. It's the simplest operator you can write, so I'm doing that. Now, as soon as you do that, this is a dimension 6 operator you have to divide by scale square. This scale has nothing to do with the electrophilic scale. This is some new scale. It's the scale of the flavor, the scale where you give mass to the standard model frame. Now, one of the industry is how do you generate this operator? Today, there's no consensus of what's the best way to generate those. We have our own model, but you know, I'm not going to go into that detail. I will give you the upshot of the problems with this. And clearly, you can imagine different approaches, depending on your sensitivity and sensibility. You can say you can be a fundamentalist of Technicolor. By fundamentalist, I mean I believe there are no fundamental scalars. And this is a statement. You haven't proved it, but you can be one of these. And there are many. And therefore, I want to construct scalarless new gauge interactions leading to these things. This paradigm goes more or less under the name of extended technical. You can be more optimist, like I am, or have to think a little bit more open-minded. I don't know why I couldn't have supersymmetry to a higher scale. I don't know of any theorem saying that it must be low-scale supersymmetry. And I know of any no theorem that says there could be no fundamental scalars above the Dirac. But I want to explain this very clearly. Supersymmetry is already both dynamical electroweak symmetry breaking because QCD breaks the electroweak dynamically. And then we supersymmetrize it. So supersymmetry is already both dynamical electroweak symmetry breaking. That happens at 1J. And nobody complained. Technicolor, we don't know if there is some supersymmetry higher scale. So it can actually possibly have these two. Or you can see just this is a calculable way to construct extended technicolor interactions. It's up to you. Then you can do bosonic technicolor, means I really don't care. I just add new scalars in the Yukawa sector and I give mass to the standard model fairness. So this is probably the least justifiable in terms of naturality. I don't want to limit your imagination. I'm sure that you can come with composite fermions, and many things have actually been considered in the literature, and I apologize for if I'm not presenting a specific model. Okay. If you have a good idea, don't tell us, Radio PRL, do. It's very important, this. Now, recently, very recently, we actually supersymmetrized this version and constructed a model of ETC, a UV complete model of ETC, where actually the UV completion was supersymmetric in nature. And demonstrated these four frame operators do exist and have a certain specific structure. Because the supersymmetric version already had some protections, right, like a minimum flavor of violating, the low energy effective theory of the four frame interactions was also highly protected. Now, I have to tell you first the overall story, which is a general story, not depending on a specific model. And of course, if you have a specific model like we had with SUSY, you can have different protections. So whatever it is, the dynamics, this ETC could be a fundamental scalar or can be a gauge scalar. This is how the technique works, and psi are my standard model fermions. At some low energy scale, you would expect some dimension 6 operators, okay, as the ones I told you. Now, this is a very, again, I'm rewriting already the first transformed objects if these were spin 1 exchanges, or actually these are the correct one if these are bosonic degrees of freedom that you're exchanging. Alpha, beta, and gamma. This describes your complete ignorance of what is the extended technicolor theory. Now, these are the operators that will emerge at the electroweak scale. If you have a large flavor symmetry group, like in QCD, you have the kaons beside the pions, you would like the kaons to be heavy, and therefore you would like to basically give them a mass. This is the operator that typically gives the mass to the kaons, the new kaons, or technic kaons, call it like that. This give mass to the standard model fermion. Immediately see if one QQ bar gets a cyber psi is a mass time operator. These are what you would like to avoid at any cost. So these are potentially large flavor change neutral current operators because they only involve the standard model fermions. Again, because I don't know gamma and I don't know the theory, I'm trying to be as safe as can possibly be and to kill these guys completely. But I might not need to do for a specific theory of extended technical, right? Is it clear the argument? And also here I'm talking about one generation. There'll be three, right? Depending on your extension, there could be different possibilities.
In this particular theory, don't you want to have UR and DL SU2 doublet for that?
Yeah.
So they do carry SU. So
that these are SU2 doublet, these are SU2 singlet,
but then your lepton have to be a standard charge.
Not necessarily, depends on the upper charge. There is an infinite, one family solution of the gauge
anomalies.
Oh,
so you have an adjoint, so you don't have to cancel anomalies.
No, exactly, not under the SU2 technical.
But it is an adjoint, you have many more operators than you have, right? Because you don't have to take a conjugate.
These are vector-like under the technicolor theory, Carillac under the weak interactions. This is identical to any other vector-like theory. There is the only thing that is going to happen that the SU2, the global symmetry is not SU2 left plus SU2 right, but an SU4 global symmetry, which in n equal to 4, SU4 R symmetry. So you have six more Gaussian bosons that you have to give a mass, and they will be given mass to these guys.
So you're saying the hypertor choice you make for those guys is somewhat arbitrary.
We make it free, and then we choose from the experiment one is the best that actually has to be. I mean, when you do more advanced analytical physics, you'll have for the most general case, and then you know, experiments will let you choose the aperture. Now, what was not actually considered for quite a while, it was the back reactions that these objects have on the technicolor theory. That was the story up to 2010. 2010 said, well, actually, we want to see the effect of the four-form interaction also on the technicolor theory, on the technicolor dynamics. And then we, in the paper on supersymmetry, we actually can compute this alphabet and get.
But then if the leptons are SU doublets, if you split their masses, don't you get contribution to T?
Yeah, but that's in the right direction. T becomes positive. See, when you move S to be negative, T becomes positive. And it's exactly what your leptons have to do. So if something is consistent, they have to go in the right direction. And they do. That's the beauty of it. Yeah. But I will show that. I'm not going to hide it. And again, anything that can be done better, I'd love to see. And so, sorry, I'm repeating now the why is it typically in the generic aesthetic technique, although hard to give mass to the standard model talk. So, if you look at the beta terms in the QQ body and put the condensate, that gives you the would-be mass to the standard model fermion. So that's the genetic expression. So this is whatever dynamics here, some GTC squared divided by lambda squared. You see also that the sun is always positive regardless of G, and that allows you to say the four-frame interaction likes to break out of symmetry. And now this is QQ back here, but this is at the scale of lambda ATC. This is not the scale of the technical. Simultaneously, the four-frame interaction might lead to this generation. You see, I put one here, but it doesn't have to be. If you have some protection in your aesthetic technical theory, this will not be a constraint. And you don't need to have large anomalous dimensions. These have never been theorems, okay? So let's be frank about this. I mean, this is just you want to be absolutely safe, and therefore you want to kill these operators. But this coefficient here depends on a specific aesthetic technicolor theory. Now, if you want to be absolutely safe, and therefore without having to care about this aesthetic technicolor theory, say that I don't have a problem with flavor change neutral currents, you want to push this scale ETC very high. Is it clear? Very good. Now I'll go back and check what happened to the QQ bar. And if you have QCD-like dynamics, then, and we'll actually show why this is the case, QQ bar at DTC of the same order of QQ bar at DTC, because there is no special, you get only logarithmic enhancement of these two condensates, that this is all the order of the technicolor scale, which is the tab. If you do that, that you see immediately that if you want to give a mass to a generic standard model fermion, this is QQ bar evaluated at DTC divided by the square of ETC. If there is QCD-like dynamics, this is a 1 tev cubed, and this is 10 to the 3 tev squared. That typically will give a very small mass to the top. You might explain, for example, the electron neutrinos, for some, but you cannot do that. So you need something else for the top. Or you need to change a paradigm. Or you need to have a better theory of a standard technical. We have to be clear about this, because there are no theorems here, right? I'm using some naive arguments to make these estimates. I would repeat this because it's quite important and there is a lot of inconsistency in the literature. At some high energy, you have some, by high energy means higher than the electroweak, can be 10 tev, 100 tev, 1000 tev. You have degeneration of the standard model fermion masses. At the electroweak breaks at a lower scale. And now if in between these scales, you would assume a logarithm running at a QCD, you get a very small enhancement of this condensate. And this for, therefore, this QQB at DTC is roughly the same as the technical scale. And then I came up with a problem that I cannot give the mass to the top. One of the way out of this is to go beyond QCD. So in QCD, if I were to use the alpha collaboration results for the running of the coupling constant in MS bar, you see that alpha actually blows. Now, this is a cartoon. You can only talk about gauge singlet operators to make sense. That's good enough for this. Assume that you have a dynamics for which the, at high energy, the theory runs at the infrared gets to a fixed point. If you add n equal to 4 super Emils, this will be constant all the way. For a theory like what I'm interested in, you have actually have this kind of behavior. It's asymptotically free at high energy. It freezes in infrared. If this were the case, in infrared, it will not generate any scale. This scale here in QCD is the proton mass, which is a normalization group in MAP. So really what I'd like to have is something that looks like this. Is running an infrared, and it breaks carasymmetry in, sorry, running ultraviolet and bring carasymmetry in infrared. It doesn't run, it doesn't stand, and therefore it walks. That's what's called walking dynamics. Okay. Till 5-6 years ago, did we know even this theory that could do this non-perturbatively? The answer was none. We knew that theories like this would exist. So theories like this would exist with, when alpha was very small, and that's called Bentzak's fixed point. So this was, in a way, a speculation, right? Why would the walking help? Well, because now let me write a normalization group equation relation. Q cubed by DTC linked to Q cubed by DTC. And this is an exact relation. So exact to be useless for the moment, right? Now, if I had a QCD-like theory, then I know that this exponential at most give me logarithmic corrections. And now you see that you don't get, even if lambda DTC is 10 to the 3, you get a factor 3. If you have a near conformal theory, now you know that you acquire power law corrections. That's the definition of conformality. And so you get lambda TC over lambda TC to a certain homologous dimension. Oh, sorry. What did I do? Okay. Probably just that. Very good. Now, that's what you get for the mass at the top. You see this is now replaced by TC, lambda TC or lambda TC to the anomalous dimension. And if this gamma is so close to 2, this lambda TC squared decouples, and you decouple the top problem from the flavor problem. That's the idea. In fact, you need a little bit less than 2. This is the paradigm of walking. Is it clear to everybody? Now, how can you achieve that? It's all another story.
Just to be clear about the numerics, you still have a suppression of a few on the mass of the top.
Yeah, it's okay. I mean, you can show that 1.7 almost matches if you put here 10 to the 3.
But if you choose G to C to be where
the point is. It's G to C between 0 and 4 pi. No, loops correction.
How far, 4 pi. How close to 4 pi do you actually
choose? Not very much. I mean, it's something like over the 1. Mm-hmm. In a GTC over the unity. But many, this is, I mean, this is a paradigm.
Well, I mean, it's a paradigm, but at some level, we have more numbers, so, you know, we measure the top of the mass of the top.
Yeah. I mean, we have to also have an ATC dynamics, too, right? So this is very naive, right? So I don't want to go much deeper into that. So, what are the ingredients? You have to understand the phase diagram is something like coupled theories. We cannot going on and say that we would like to have this kind of dynamics, but perhaps this dynamics doesn't exist at all. Then who cares about GTC value in the first place? Then, in fact, you can motivate that walking per se is also a bad idea, because how you can make sure that you have a theory that has exactly the large anomalous dimension with an integer number of flavors which happen to be just below the conformal windows? That's highly fine-tuned. And I need a working example of ETC, like Cliff was saying this a lot, right? So the idea of working basically was introduced in 2010, and I think that Takeuchi in his PhD thesis a year was saying something similar, right? And then you need a working example of ETC. We constructed, as I said before, a SUSE ETC, and if you want to know more about that, it takes some time, it's not an easy step. But can actually be constructed. So what do we know about the phase diagram, right? This is a progress that happened since 2004, not much more than that. I will just be giving a brief summary of that. So when I talk about the strongly coupled theory, I need to pick up a gauge group. It can be unitary, orthogonal, or symplectic. Nobody has told us we have to take a technicolor theory all in SU, what I know. Then I have to pick the matter representation. It can be fundamental, it can be adjoint, it can be two-index symmetric, and it can be actually different representations. Then I have to pick the number of flavorable representation. So let me give the example of an SUN gauge theory, where I start increasing the number of flavors. Take, for example, QCD, so three colors, and start increasing the number of flavors. For two flavors, I know that there is chiaroasymmetry breaking, and lattice has confirmed that the theory, in fact, is a scale in the theory, and this is the running of the coupling constant. Then I can actually go a sufficiently large number of flavors where the first coefficient of the beta function changes sign, and therefore I know that just below here I can trust a perturbative fixed point. I should also go a large n, but for a moment let me forget. So I would expect that around here, alpha is actually small. And as if I decrease the number of flavors, this alpha increases. And at one point, it becomes like this. Above that, we typically say the theory loses asymptotic freedom, and I don't care. It's actually true, first question, that this is a boring phase diagram, a large number of flavors. Actually, this does not need to be so boring. In fact, if you go at large enough, some people have argued that they have the beta function, the leading order 1 over nf. So we could actually explore whether or not this theory was asymptotically safe. So at infinite number of flavor, we were able to see, that given the coefficient of this beta function given by these people, that there is an ultraviolet fixed point at infinite number of flavors. Now, for people doing gravity, interested in asymptotic safe gravity, I think this is the first time that there is an example in four dimensions where one can see asymptotic safety emerging, which is fun. We can even test this. Because of the four-dimensional non-supersymmetric gauge theory, lattice can test. What I cannot tell you is the radius of convergence in 1 over nf. This T of f is a quadratic Casimir of the theory. That means that, although I can tell you there is a fixed point at large nf, if I consider 1 over nf square correction to it, that can be destroyed. Right? So that's the radius of convergence. That's true for any large n limit we take. Right? We take the large n, then we need to check the 1 over n. So, but lattice now and already thinking can actually study for a finite nf whether or not they see an ultraviolet fixed point using the Schrödinger function. So, this, I think this is just alone, per se, is quite interesting. Good. So, using different methods, more trustable than others, and some also devised in Canada, in fact, by Eric Poppitz, you can start seeing. Now, this beige one was, in fact, a conformal window that I told before. That now, here I've put the number of flavors. Here's the number of colors. This was the line you've seen before. And now this becomes a window. Right? This is where you lose asymptotic freedom, and that's calculable. And this is where you have to use non-perturbative dynamics to be able to claim what's the lower bound on that. I don't want to dwell on that. There are different groups that have done that. And surprisingly, they're very close to each other. Below this line, you have below this window, you have that you lose asymptotic freedom. Sorry, you have chiaroasymmetry breaking. Inside, you have the fixed point, and above, you have a very interesting new stuff emerging. Now, what are these other things? The blue one, if I take the quarks not in the fundamental but the two-index symmetric, you get these other diagrams. And if you take the adjoint, you actually see the green one. Now, the first thing we observed in 2004 with Kimmo Tuominen was for this theory, two-index symmetric and the adjoint, you reach conformality for two Dirac flavors. That was the only grail of working technical. Well, for this one, you need a very large number of flavors, and we have said the S-parameter doesn't like those. For these guys, you could do that. That has reopened the window on working technical. Is it clear? Lattice. Well, since this diagram first appeared 2005-4, then a large number of lattice simulations have started. And you can see that this can mean even two, three groups working on that. In fact, beyond Southern model physics, on the lattice is becoming one of the biggest enterprise of lattice right now. So I'm quite confident that in 4 or 5 years, we will have a new book on strong dynamics telling us what these theories do. And two-index symmetric or a joint, they actually do what we hoped they were doing. They're either conformal or near conformal. We can already say that. But it's very hard to say that it's exactly conformal, it's near conformal. But one thing is clear, these theories don't look at all like QCD. which I think is a big success regardless whether we're going to use it for LHC or not. Now, go back to the models. Now that I have a phase diagram, I can start picking models there. The first model is exactly what I presented here. I would like to have only technique up and technique down. That is minimize the S parameter in the first place. Now, one thing I can take is SU2 in this twin index symmetric in the SU2 is the adjoint, so I'm not cheating. It's exactly the same as I put it here. And now, for Witten anomaly, you must have a new neutrino and electron. You can go to next, the minimum working technicolor. Now, you don't need the Witten anomaly. Then you need the isosplitting between up and down in order to do the precision tests. Then you can have orthogonal technicolor, ultra-minimal technicolor. So you can start constructing number tiers. I heard that you had a talk by one of my collaborators. He was discussing one sector of this model done on the lattice to clarify the pattern of carasymmetry breaking in this model. And it agrees with what we were hoping. All they have in common is what I will call the vanilla technicolor sector, meaning the SU2 left cross SU2 right breaks to SU2 vectorial.
Sorry. The next minimal working technicolor, how do you achieve the negative S if you don't have any?
Well, you can have through the four-frame interaction, have an isospin splitting between the up and down. Yeah, it's a little bit more. Right, then you can do the Fetti Lagrangian level for the pions of this theory. That was done by Lisa Randall. And, I mean, you can look at the isospin splitting.
I can sort of believe the statement about the lepton correcting
the UIS. For the moment, I will be discussing this most. Okay, so let's not get into the others. This is the one we'll be studying.
Okay, can I ask you one more question about that phase? So you do need the Higgs in that phase. You don't need the composite Higgs in that phase.
You don't need it. I mean, you can have it. I mean.
So this is the thing that I want to understand. Because if it's really heavy, then you're way off. And then you need the contribution from
No. Let me say, I'll show you for different value of the Higgs that you actually inside the precision test in any case. Yeah. So let me just, I will get back to this. It's a good question. So how would the new standard model look like, you know? It was the question asked before. I eliminate the Higgs, and I say an SU2 theory, technique up and technique down and technique blue. Nothing particular. This isn't the adjoint of SU2, so nothing repetitive. Sorry. Not very fancy, and then a new electron, neutrino electron. That's the way would this D replacement of the Higgs look like on some fundamental level. At the electroweak scale. I'm not making any statement about the extended technicolor theory, okay? Is it clear? All right. So the table is not incredibly worse than it was
and
before.
Those are SU2
yes, absolutely. So let's compute S. So S has two contributions, one from the technicolor, a working technicolor sector, and one is in the new sector. This one can be large and offset the first one. Now, this is the upshot. For different miles, so I'm not making any claim about the Higgs in this theory because it's exquisite, a non-perturbative dynamical problem, can be very light or can be very heavy. I don't want to do that. What I can do is to plot this precision test for different reference value of the mass of the Higgs. That's what was the value of for Weinberg, as asking. And this is the available region. So this would be the without the leptons. It is adding the lepton split. You see that T increases. And of course, you have a parabola because you can have one average than the other average than the other, that actually goes to different values of T. Right? So there's a region where you overlap within one standard deviations on these states, depending on the hypercharge choice.
What is actually minus 3/2 your sample?
Yeah. So this is the way it is. All right.
So for the small choices,
you should have lighter things. You will have lighter things. I mean, 400 Jev will be actually okay.
417.
Well, it depends. You know, depends how you want to consider that. There's still an overlap, so I cannot exclude. All right. So what are the features of this theory? It is the most economical working technicolor theory. Just one up and down. There's nothing particularly fancy, you know. I just told you that it's possible to make it compatible with the precision measurements. If you look at the spectrum, the theory might even have some dark matter candidates. And it can feature a light composite Higgs because it's a near conformal field theory. And it's, I could say that's one of the most studied theories on the lattice beyond QCD.
In this in the region where you overlap, so mm-hmm. go back, what is your choice for lambda BC?
Well, this is just one. It's just the the correct mass of the dot.
But how heavy is lambda BC?
As I said, as in QCD, you have to compute an hadronic state, and that will be given automatically in that stage. So, for example, it's insufficient to compute the mass of the dot. It's basically 250 JeV, the decay constant.
But I want to go back to the issues that, you know, this is the 117, you have a light scalar, and I want to understand how heavy is your.
So, the other way around is like this. In a strongly coupled theory, imagine you're doing you can put it on a computer. In computer, there are only dimensionless numbers, right? You can only compute ratios of masses. In QCD, you have to fix one mass to one hadronic state, and then all the other masses are given.
I understand. I'm asking if you do that, what do you get from lambda
C? As I said, it's just the standard 250. I mean, you don't. In this way, let me rephrase your question in a way.
But before we said, you said about this is VTV,
right.
So.
No. What I said before, it was the spectrum of the theory can have spin one resonances which have masses of order 3 tera, keeping fixed the correct electroweak breaking scenario, which is 250 JeV for the decay constant of the path. So you always fix the constant, the minor scale of this theory, to give the correct W mass. In the same way that in QCD, you keep always fixed the running of the coupling constant in such a way that the proton mass turns out to be the right one. Now, the spectrum of the theory will be scaled compared to that one. So, that's why I'm trying to rephrase it in a field theoretical way that makes sense, is that we can compare the ratio of these masses. So, say m rho over f pi, and this is 250 JeV, this is not going to change. The ratio of this depends on the specific technical of dynamics you're thinking. This, if this were QCD, then this guy is about 2.5 10 divided by 250 JeV. This is QCD.
Yeah. Okay. Your theory,
in this theory, because it's a near conformal field theory, the spectrum becomes lighter. By how much is not yet completely clear. But it can be, let's say, 200, 300, 400 JeV. This is a it's not being computed exactly, so this has to be started. That's the way it is. All right, so what we can do is write on the other end the effective Lagrangians with these global symmetries and try to compare with the data. So I've given it in a line theory, but that's like in QCD. That's what I give you, but it's not what they will see immediately. They have to reconstruct the underlying gauge theory by looking at the spectrum of the theory. Right? We knew there were QCD with three colors when Nambu realized that to explain the delta plus plus, he needed, you know, also color indices. So I would like to write down a composite theory, which is exactly the same global symmetry of my underlying theory, couple it with the standard model fields, and then add the new leptons and subtract the Higgs of the standard model. For example, what we did at the effective Lagrangian level is to add a composite Higgs and a composite axial and vector states. So these are the simplest things you can add in this theory. There are other states which actually are still being included in this theory. And now you can also add the electrons and the neutrino and study the phenomenology of this. Once you've done that, at the effective Lagrangian level, the underlying theory should fix everything. Should keep fix the mass of this, should keep fix the mass of H, should also fix the self-couplings. Because at the moment we're still far away from a precise determination of all this, we actually wrote the most generic chiral Lagrangian that you can have. I mean, generic chiral Lagrangian. And with that, we were able to study, for example, the things like this. QQ bar goes into a vector resonance, and this goes, for example, in leptons, and these are the Drellian processes you can study. And that is what we use this here. And the vertex here, this vertex here is proportional to the mixing with the standard model coupling. So this is G over G tilde. And this is also G over G tilde, where G is weak Now you see why, as you go, a larger G tilde, your constraints become weaker.
So the mass, in your theory, the mass of this A is not particle?
No, it's actually free, and I can only tell you in which, if it goes over QCD, what is the actual value of that. But now, lattice data should be able to tell me which mass, which coupling is, for a given theory. Okay. And that's the way it will be. Again, think about the way we discovered QCD, which is actually by writing the Fetti Lagrange diagram back to the underlying theory. The other thing that we can use, I'm not explaining here, is that the pattern of carasymmetry breaking, there will be other Gaussian bosons, and how do they behave, and so forth, so on, would help us constructing, reconstruct the underlying theory. Exactly in the way, the eightfold way, has allowed us to reconstruct the carasymmetry of QCD. Okay. Now, how tired you are, as you tell me, and I either.
Maybe we can go for another 4 minutes.
All right. I will just tell you, the way,
the free change correction, yeah. So the bottom line here has been that you're not expecting the light hits, right?
I did not discuss that. There's another talk for that. Depending on how close you are to the conformal window, you can actually have a dilaton in this theory, and it can be very light. Yes. Actually, some people have tried to estimate using finger dials and how light will be a minimum working technique of the Higgs, and it will be something like around 150 joules. Taking with a grain of salt, because there's a lot of uncertainty in the non-perturbative dynamics associated with that. But that can be more precise, because we recently studied perturbative theories near to a perturbative fixed point and shown that, in fact, there's a dilaton, and you can study a number of things there. But that's all another talk. So I don't want to say anything specific about that.
But supposing we hadn't seen the 125 GeV results, and you were asked at that point, what's the generic prediction of your theory, what would you have said?
So, what I'm writing right now is that what I will say is that assume that you have a light Higgs, you have to tell me whether, or a Higgs of 120 joules, we have to decide whether or not it's composite or elementary. So we already done these studies already in 2007. But these theories at the beginning were not called minimal working technique, but light composite Higgs. The original name of this was light composite Higgs, where I had explained at that time how a dilaton could naturally emerge in this theory. Have been reprinted recently again. And so things that we gave as possible thing to study that to disentangle whether it's fundamental or composite from the experimental point of view is this. And this is something that is quite topical right now. So, as I said, you can study another particle, another process in the standard model, which is a very famous one, the associate production of the Higgs with the standard model gauge boson. So this could be either a Z or a W, and then you have a Higgs. If this is light, you can produce it. Now, if this is strongly coupled dynamics, and this is associated with strongly coupled dynamics, there will be also this other vertex here. Because they're actually related. So what we were shown, that we showed, basically, in 2007, is that, sorry, 2008 or 7, I don't remember. Is that you can have large interference between these two channels, which can lead to 100% correction to the cross-section for the production of a light Higgs. So we know through the presence of this, whatever is going to be your light Higgs, if it comes from a strongly coupled dynamics, it must have also other hadronic states. Therefore, the interplay between these diagrams will be essential to tell apart the standard model Higgs from a composite one with the same mass. So we can study proton-proton into HW, proton-proton in HZ, and compare it to the standard model cross-section.
Just to play back what I think you said is that for generic parameters, you don't have a light Higgs, but you can arrange to have one if you want one. And if you found one, you could tell it apart because you could look at this detailed coupling.
Absolutely.
It would not look like vanilla standard.
Absolutely. So we will, as I said, we have a bottom-up approach and a top-down. The bottom up is that I constructed Fetti Lagrangian with the Higgs inside, composite Higgs, and asked myself the question, how do I disentangle it from a standard model Higgs? And this is very interesting for the phenomenologists, for the experimentalists, regardless of my prejudice about what is underlying here. Simultaneously, we also studying theories which are near conformal in a controllable way and try to see if there is a dilaton there and how does it look like. And that is a theoretical talk where I can tell you there are theories, but that's the case. And I can study the dynamics of these objects. Then, depending if it is truly conformal or not, how that's coupled to the standard model, either as a conformal compensator or other things. But that will be a second stage from the experimental point of view. What it will do first is to test this.
In the scenario where you have light Higgs,
yeah.
You're saying all you get is light Higgs. Don't get other light things too.
Right. So, for example, we have shown recently that depending on your strongly coupled dynamics, there are cases where if there can be a dilaton, which is light, and the theory can have states which are even much, much lighter than that. It's actually untrue. The dilaton is not necessarily the lightest one. It actually can be. It's the one that saturates the dilatonic curve, but not necessarily the lightest object in the spectrum. There are beautiful things in field theory that is more general. So a theory with the near conformal dynamics or conformal dynamics will clearly have an object saturating the dilatonic curve. To make the statement of what the spectrum will actually look like will depend on the specific theory. And this is and I can be more precise by giving you the specific theory we're studying in a perturbative regime and demonstrating that the lattice state is not the deep, is actually not the deep. That's actually a beautiful example if you see it. So I don't want to make statements that.
So I'm hoping you're going to nail your colors to the mast and say, if you see this, I'm dead. And choose.
No, I mean, okay, so the question, I mean, if you see, as I said, how did we know it was QCD and was not another tier, right? So if you see, for example, in this model, for the specific minimum walking technique order, you have to reconstruct the entire spectrum of the tier. Meaning, not entirely, it means whole hundreds of particles. But for example, the pion spectrum. But I didn't say here that this object has an SU4, wasn't very specific. SU4 breaks to SO4, there are 9 Gaussian boosts. 3 are eaten, 6 remain Gaussian boosts. These 9 must be seen to actually identify minimum walking technique. Even if there is a splitting, they have to be there. So it's a clear signature of right. So this is what as in QCD, the very clear pattern of ferrocerium breaking there to be reconstructed.
Sorry, why is it 9 to 5?
SU4 breaks to SO4. There are 15 generators in SU4 and 6 in SO4. Yeah. Now SU4 breaks to SP4. There are 5. And there's another again, depending on the and that is another underlying HD. So we will be able to tell from the spectrum. And also the fermionic spectrum, which theory that is. With the holographic technicolor, now since we are there, you cannot say that because you're making everything at the bosonic sector. So you don't know what the underlying structure actually is.
Well, there are things.
Yeah, but I mean, right. I mean, just to say, in terms of being ambitious, that I can do. Huh? I can actually, sorry.
So just for considering the time,
yeah.
Maybe we can just skip to the conclusions
yeah.
And then.
If anybody's interested in how you make that matter of the distance, or in fact, even how you can think about inflation, which is quite interesting, we can discuss this separately, yeah? All right. So we'll just conclude here. I did not explain the other two parts of this, but let me just say that it's interesting to start exploring the possibility that you can naturalize the Higgs of the standard model. This was an old idea, so it's not, you know. We have better methods. I would say probably better models, but the idea was there. And now the question is, if you believe that, you can start asking questions about, if you look at the Lagrangian, the inflaton, it looks very similar to Lagrangian in the Higgs. So it would be nice to see whether or not there's some fundamental dynamics there driving it. And actually, it's possible to conceive and to start studying this theory in some detail. And of course, dark matter, we know very little about that, but I would love to have a reduction principle, again, I'm in this sense also ambitious. I would like to have a basis for which I can understand these different sectors of the extension of the standard model that look very similar to each other. So dark matter could actually be composite, and there are possible resolution of some basic puzzles right now that can be viewed like that. So my ultimate goal is to either rule in or completely rule out the possibility of well-defined four-dimensional gauge theories as a basis and natural ones, which means without hierarchy problem, both for cosmology and for astrophysics and the Higgs, that give a basis for the future. If that fails, at least we will have understood strongly coupled dynamics per se, and this I think is interesting from my point of view regardless. Thank you.
So you can stay until tomorrow, just.
No, I really love this because, I mean,
it's
much better than just giving the talk. It's really, really good.
So we will stay more questions, but if anyone wants to leave it as a fun, feel free to ask questions. Just because we are already almost over time. So back to this, to the, as Philip said, the precise model.
Yeah, I did. So
you have this. So when you write SU2, so that theory is you have SU4 global set. So in this particular theory, you have nine goals. Yes.
And you know.
And you don't know how heavy your the next slide is, the ones that we had the plot for the.
I mean the spin one.
Spin one.
Well, no, you can use what we did is to use Weinberg-Sum rule to relate the mass of the axis to the mass of the vector, and with that you can start making some kind of constraint analysis.
But then don't you need it for this pattern?
Say it again?
Don't you need it?
Yeah. This is so. What you do at the effective Lagrangian level, you study for different values of the mass of this ball.
But then I'm confused because how can this interference have any effect when all has to be a T of yours?
Right, but for a walking technicolor theory, what I was telling was a QCD which is not walking. These are 2.5 there. For a walking theory, the entire spectrum collapses to basically, it becomes unparticles. So the entire spectrum actually collapses and becomes very light.
But don't you still have bounds from this thing?
That's exactly what this diagram did, is the bound of how light can possibly be.
Yeah, but in your theory, so again, let's forget about the singleton work. In your theory, don't you have bounds on this?
How light they can be?
How light this guy can be, yeah.
No, it depends on, you have to get it from the lattice. You cannot.
Observation.
Okay, so the observation is here, right. So if this depends on the self-coupling from the observation point of view, depends on the self-coupling of the technical rope versus the common mass of the axial vector.
Right,
so
you can see here.
Yeah.
How can this diagram be important?
Yeah, let me give you an example.
Yeah.
If you have a mass of the axial first of all, what we're shown up to two tenths, already with the phi inverse femtobands, you can actually feel them, even just in Reliant. Okay, so that's already there. So it's not too low, as a matter. Of course, that means that G tilde is small. If G tilde becomes large, then your masses of these guys becomes smaller. Now, this, and you will think, okay, but Francesco, this is not very easy to constrain, because now G tilde is large, therefore I cannot see in this diagram. But in that particular vertex, the suppression does not go in G tilde, because you have G over G tilde here, but here's proportional to G tilde. So the two self-coupling cancel each other, and you have a cross-section of the order of the electroweak, even with the light mass of the air, provided that you're outside the precision test constraints. So so you can have complementary.
Why do you need to produce that R boson through quarks, or just produce it through WW fusion?
Oh, yeah. No, you can do, but this is actually, it's kinematically suppressed respect to this one. I mean, you can do, we also tested that. Right. You mean this one?
Yeah.
We also studied that. We studied, in the Discovery Technicolor report, we studied all this, also the vector-vector boson fusion. Yeah, we have done. And we find out that this is still, depending on what you're analyzing, the Drellian is the cleanest one because you just have the left inside the final states, and it's been on double ground as a parameter before, it's the same. For the Higgs, if it's light, this is the best one. So we actually analyze all of them. So we have done a thorough analysis for them. And that's why it took 6-7 years to do that. There's still other things that have to be done. Now Atlas is filing for getting us into the Atlas collaboration to do that. And again, without writing effective Lagrangian, this cannot be done. In order to study these interferences and so on, up to now in PETIA, was only added to this guy, and this guy was more or less color 2. So this would not happen.
So the calculation you're describing, you just basically take the SO4, goes to your symmetry group sigma model, couple it to the gate to go to the
Very simple. Yeah. Absolutely. nothing particularly fancy from that point.
But it's at the 2-variable level, or you have to go to the 4-variable level?
Because we have spin 1 resonances, so we basically as if in Carrier perturbation theory it would be 2-4 derivatives. But in fact, we have done at the level of the linear sigma model because we thought it was easier for the event generators and so forth and so on. And now we're also including, now we're moving to the nonlinear Lagrangian, where the is, I mean, you can demonstrate that at the 3-level, whether it's linear or nonlinear, of course, get the same results. However, it's nonlinear is cleaner because you have less operators for the same
linear
purpose.
Linear pairs around the state, if it's heavy, it should be.
Yes, right, exactly. So, but I mean, the question is when you do nonlinear Lagrangian, you can still add the scalar. You have to add it as a matter field, and it couples only derivative, but the Weinberg theorems only couples derivatively to your points. But the linear Lagrangian knows that. When if you try to decouple the sigma, you find that it couples only derivative to the points, or in the low energy scattering, it does correctly. So these theories are all related at 3-level. They're different at the quantum level. It means if you do quantum loops on the Carrier Lagrangian, it's not renormalized. If you do it on the linear sigma model, it is renormalized. If you add spin 1, it is not renormalized. So, you know, but because you add the LHC, all these event generators are all 3-level, the difference is not very big. But effectively, all they are only using 3-level. Or if it's not a 3-level process, you compute the one loop, then you add it in the effective action, and you put in the event generator. So
the sigma state,
they
actually keep the sigma state?
Yeah, we did. Yeah. We keep it. And then you can plot for different values of the mass.
So it should disagree with the nonlinear sigma model to the extent that the sigma is part of
the. Yeah, in fact, it does. For example, in this case, you get so this interference with these two states, which is not in the standard model. Another way you could say, from your language point of view, if you integrate out the spin 1 resonance, this is a different coupling to the W than the standard model Higgs, right? So if you integrate out the degrees of freedom, now we tend to keep them inside because it's nicer from the experimental point of view to try to see if there is a bump for the spin 1 field. But if the Higgs is lighter than the rho, then you will have to integrate from the effective Lagrangian point of view, a nicer thing would be to integrate out all the heavier objects to keep only the lightest one, right? For example, the Higgs and the composite Higgs and the standard model W and Z. Only that the coupling of this composite Higgs to the WZ is not the standard model coupling. It will be modified. And this is clear that it's modified because when I integrate this out, this is a modification to the vertex of the Higgs to the WZ.
I would say that if you give me some strong dynamics with some pseudo boson bosons, then the pseudo boson bosons have properties that are universal. But then the stuff that's not pseudo boson bosons will be model specific. And a particular model will be the linear sigma model for which you've taken a specific non-Boltzmann state. And to the extent that you're seeing that, you're looking at some model kind of detail.
Yeah, okay, so what we have shown, for example, we studied the W double scattering for technical with linear sigma model and non-linear sigma model. And of course, you reproduce the old theorem by Hag that says at a 3-level, if you add all the sufficient operators, these two tiers have to be the same, the non-linear.
Well, specifically, if you take the linear sigma model and you nail down sigma,
yeah,
then it becomes the same.
Like give an example, okay, so at the linear sigma model level, depends how do we count, right? If I add, take this operator, or take this other operator. These two operators, when this acquires a valve, are mapped in the same derivative operator for the path.
Sorry, what is your M here?
M is my linear sigma model, right? So M is
so
my
is some happy
sigma data plus I tau dot pi.
And your pi is
the pi. The pi is pi. Now you can see two different operators for the linear sigma model mapped in one single operator of the pi, which is a standard d mu u d mu dot. So the problem with the linear sigma model, that's why we're also moving to the nonlinear sigma one, is that many more operators will be needed to reconstruct the derivative interactions because they actually have the coefficient which is cleaner, if you want. So there's fewer interaction in the derivative. In the derivative expansion corresponds to more interaction in the linear sigma model. But if the physics is the same, it wouldn't matter the way of written.
I'm not sure if we're talking about the same thing.
Yeah, probably.
I would have said that if you took sigma and you fixed it equal to its vacuum value, mm-hmm, and then classically solve that theory, and that is the same as an analytical.
Absolutely.
Okay. But if you actually take the classical theory with sigma where you don't fix it, so that's the limit of infinite mass sigma.
Yeah, okay.
But if you take the sigma mass not to be infinite, mm-hmm. then anything that sees a propagating sigma particle is a deviation from the non-linear sigma model. And so,
oh, I see. Yeah.
And
right.
It's a very specific model. It's just a specific example of this general statement
sure.
that your ultraviolet completion will differentiate
yeah.
from the Coulson bosons in some
absolutely.
Way.
Yeah.
And this is one way.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. This,
so.